Hello, and it's very, very nice to have all of you back. It's been a wonderful experience doing this series with Sister Denise entitled The Gita Decoded. We are now on episode 47, where we will be doing an overview or a synopsis of what is contained in chapter 14 of the Bhagavad Gita. Sister Denise, it's always great to have you here. Thank you so much for being here and welcome back.
Thank you.
Chapter 14 is a very rich chapter filled with a mine of information as to human conduct, and describes humanity in mainly in the form of the three gunas. Sister Denise, from a Western point of view, because I'm looking at the Gita with fresh eyes, I have categorized the sattvic stage as the stage of enlightenment, the rajasic stage as the stage of semi-enlightenment, and the tamasic stage as the stage of ignorance. Am I right?
I think yes. It's a bit strange to figure between your enlightened or you're partially enlightened.
Yes.
And it's a difficult situation, the rajasic, because they get it but not quite. Or they almost get it but not quite. It's not ignorant, but then it's not enlightened.
The one stanza that says that he who is sattvic is upwardly mobile, and he who is rajasic is the middle level. And stays there.
Static.
And he who is tamasic is going down south. So one can use arrows.
Yes.
To depict the three stages. What is of interest to me is that all three states are not so much related to the birth one takes, but the actions one performs. There's that connection.
Yeah, in fact, the kind of person you are, the personality type you are, the sort of karma you have, that is anyway going to indicate what sort of birth you take. And then you have your sanskaras. And of course, the yoga that you do is going to modify your sanskaras. So the one who is really pure is wanting to get purer. I think I feel a bit sympathetic for the stagnant ones, the rajasic ones, because it seems like they're not getting anywhere, which is a pity. And of course, the tamasic ones going down, well, that's how it is.
Okay, Sister Denise, would you link the three gunas to the law of karma for us? I know you've done so before, you know, verse by verse, but could you share how the two are linked? The reason I ask this question is because many who find themselves in dire circumstances think that they are doomed to lead such a life for the rest of eternity. Okay? And they're... They feel stuck. Could you help us through that?
Well, this, I think, is connected with the concept of fate. And there are people who say, you know, once your destiny is there and you define your destiny for yourself as I'm doomed, then because of the idea of fate being something you can't do anything about, then you extrapolate and say, well, that I can't do anything about being doomed. However, you see God talking about karma, akarma, vikarma. So sukarma, the pure karma, the neutral karma, which is generally translated as non-action or inaction, which in Brahma Kumaris we speak of as neutral action, and then the vikarma, the negative karma. So a sattvic type of person would be what we call somebody who is practicing to be soul conscious and to be linked, you know, connected with their higher side of the self, which is something we find in the capital S, and also in remembrance of God. There's also this additional idea of being an instrument of God, but the main thing is that you're doing karma, which is raising your level. That means you're evolving, you are moving to a higher and higher stage. So this is the sattvic person. Now the rajasic person is not doing neutral karma, no. The rajasic person is in struggle. Sometimes soul conscious, sometimes body conscious, sometimes unable to be soul conscious, uncomfortable with being body conscious. It's a difficult situation and you are stuck, you are static, you are stagnant. And such a person would be sometimes doing something good, sometimes dragged back by their sanskaras, a reactive type of karma. But then the tamasic person, they would be totally into hedonism. They would not care about anyone. They just, and you'll see this in later, the final books of the Gita, they're really defined in the 17th chapter as the demoniacal people, those who are totally motivated by desire, greed, passion, violence, all of this. Another thing that we can look at is that the sattvic person is very focused on their state of being and on doing very subtle action, creating a pure atmosphere, having good wishes, serving people with their being. And the rajasic person is more into action. So we may want to look at the idea of soul consciousness, action consciousness, and body consciousness for the three qualities. So the rajasic person is motivated by passion. They want to do something, but then they become caught up in what we call I-ness and minus. I am doing this. This is my project. You'll start really wanting to possess it. So that's a bit rajasic. And I think that a lot of us are caught up in that. And then we have to be very aware, okay, I'm in action consciousness. What I need to do is raise my level of consciousness. Because I think already if a person is studying the knowledge of the Gita, practicing Raj Yoga, they will anyway be eschewing the tamasic behavior and state of being.
I like that word, eschewing. Yes, okay. Will that come naturally?
You see, if you're really a tamasic person, you're not going to be drawn to spirituality. You're focused on hedonism, and that is that. So, okay.
Yes, Denise, we've been covering this entire series now in what is now the 47th episode. And what is very obvious to myself and to the viewer is that you are an intellectual and you have an academic as well as an experiential understanding of the Bhagavad Gita. Now, there are millions who are aware of the Bhagavad Gita, who read it, who understand it, who try to live it, or practice what is contained in it. Is truth the something that somebody who's not an intellectual can grasp, a simple person, not stupid, not idiotic, but simple, or is it the purview of the intellectual? Is the Bhagavad Gita for everybody? That is my question.
Yes.
Not just somebody of your ilk.
No, what happens is there is the verses, the shlokas of the Bhagavad Gita, which a person will study and read every day. This is one of the practices that some Hindus will do. It's part of the religion. But there is a vast majority of people who will not sit down and read it. Of course, the Gita is written in Sanskrit, so most people don't know Sanskrit. And even you and I would hardly dare to attempt to pronounce the Sanskrit. We would definitely have it wrong. Mm. But what we have is, I think, from Winthrop Sargent, a very much of an accepted translation. I think in the academic world of the Western universities, who do study the Gita from the academic angle, they would work with this translation. But most people, they don't read the Gita, but they know about what's contained in it. So for example, in generally speaking, the practices of most Hindus is to attend a satsang. And there will be a pundit, a scholar, a person who is very familiar with the Gita, and they will talk about different concepts. They may go into the detail of the meaning of certain shlokas. So what happens is there are particular phrases from the Gita that are really well known. Everybody has heard about it. Take, for example, the expression, the soul is his own best friend or his own worst enemy. I mean, that is an internationally known important statement, but few people will know that this comes from the Gita.
Mm.
And yet everybody knows that it's a truism, you see. So there is truth that is absolutely for everyone, and truth is very subtle. And when you go into the details of the Gita verse by verse, then you find that's hard work, because there's so many different ways that it could be interpreted, and someone will say, no, it has to be interpreted this way. Someone else will say, no, it's that way. And then we will say, well, you know, maybe, you know. So I think actually what most people do, which I think is what we're doing, is we're going for the things that strike us.
Mm.
And we're going into the details of it. And because I have been studying the Raj Yoga as it is presented by Shiv Baba through Prajapita Brahma in the Brahma Kumaris World Spiritual University, this is our awareness of the Gita through that lens. And so we're always looking at it in terms of what we learn from the Muralis and like this. So what I'm trying to do, and I think most of my brothers and sisters are trying to do, is to understand the spirit of the Gita. And we talked earlier about the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. And the spirit of the Gita is really very, very subtle, deep truth that I am not this body, and we have to detach, and I am fundamentally pure, and my relationship with God, part of my relationship with God is the, by telling me the knowledge of the Gita, God is causing me to understand myself, to understand God, to understand the world in a much more refined way than hitherto. So the whole thing of the study of the Gita is a refinement of the self. We're trying to become more and more sattva pradhan. We're trying to raise the level of our consciousness. We're trying to be very aware, really try to see the difference between the world of spirit, the world of matter, and function in that awareness. That's a very subtle type of consciousness. And of course, you always slip away from it. So I think what we're trying to do in Brahma Kumaris is really practice what the Gita is wanting to say to us. And then there should be a difference in our karma, which means that, and we were talking earlier about fate, a very important question, if you change your consciousness, you'll change your karma. If you change your karma, you'll change the direction of your life, which means you'll change your fate.
Mr. Denise, what strikes me about the depth of chapter 14 is that in order to be aware as to the quality of your actions or your words for that matter, you have to be self-aware, firstly, and secondly, you have to care about yourself. And when I mean self, I mean you care about yourself today. You also care about the quality of your life 10 years from now and in your next birth.
Yes.
Okay. A shockingly large percentage of people, whether they love God or not, have very little or no value for themselves at all. Okay, which invites self-sabotage.
Yes.
Now, how do you cure yourself of that malady and care about your future and about yourself enough to create a good future for yourself?
I would say, you know, one of the things I've learned in Brahma Kumari, especially from Dadi Janki, is she says, you know, swachintan ishwar chintan. Think about yourself. Think about God. This is an injunction. You must think about yourself because you're responsible for yourself and what happens to you. Now, in the Western world, which we grew up in, you have the conventional morality, which very often will say to a person who is thinking about themselves, don't be selfish. And this message of you have to think about others, don't think about yourself, does actually sabotage the attention that one needs to have on the self, which is very much emphasized in the Gita. So I think what we have here in a way is a conflict or a difference of angle between the message of God and the message of conventional morality. And conventional morality is basically the ideas that have been handed down through the ages by the main elite thinkers of any particular society. And that is people who have figured out, okay, this is the way to go. The thing with the Gita, which is so fascinating, is that it is said to have come from God. And so God speaks from a very, very different angle from people. And so we have these expressions, Srimad, and the name of the Gita is Srimad Bhagavad Gita, the supreme directions of God, the divine song. Then you have another expression, which is Paramat. Paramat is the directions that come from others, or what we can call as the external moral authorities, which are, in a general way, parents, teachers, religious leaders. And then you have another thing which is called Manmat. And Manmat is, in my way of thinking, you raised in a conventional external moral authorities angle on things, and you internalize that, and that becomes your own views, you see. So these three strands of influence impact a person, and I think this is where the sabotage comes from, especially in the Western world.
So that level of self-care can be learned?
Well, I think not just only it can be learned, but it really needs to be learned, and we need to learn to look after ourselves, take responsibility for ourselves, because ultimately, who else is going to? You know, when you're a small child, you listen to the adults around you, but a certain point in time comes where you say, okay, now I have to figure it out for myself. And then you begin to realize that, you know, I'm responsible for myself. I have to look after myself. And that doesn't mean, you know, we have this expression, look after number one, at the expense of everybody else. So I think that our moral environment has a little bit contaminated and undermined a person's requirement to take care of the self.
So Denise, coming back to the three gunas, is it about behavior only, or does it involve other aspects of human functioning? I'm thinking about, you know, you mentioned earlier the word drishti. There's also your attitudes, there's your awareness, there's internal functioning, and then speech and conduct is on the outside. Now, does the three gunas cover just what's on the outside or inside as well?
Definitely it covers the inside and the outside, and whatever happens on the outside is because of what's going on the inside anyway. Any action begins with a thought, and your thoughts arise from your interpretation of your sense perceptions on one level, but they're also connected with what comes up from your subconscious, from your ancient memories, your recent memories. So all of this is sato, rajo, or tamo. Mm-hmm. And so these three qualities permeate every aspect of existence. Mm-hmm. Even anything new will be called sato. Mm-hmm. Anything a little bit old is rajo. And anything very old, decrepit, is tamo. So it has to do also not only with purity, impurity, but freshness and old age, even food, you see. Fresh food is called sato, not just fresh food, but vegetarian food, all this, and then tamo. And you'll see in later chapters of the Gita, it goes into even the question of food.
Mm-hmm. And Sister Denise, if one has to look at where one is in terms of the three gunas, then how does God fit into this picture? Does God only relate to the one who's sattvic, or does his vision also fall on the rajasic and the tamasic as well? Does he choose, or does your level choose how God relates to you, or is there any other criteria that's used for one's connection with God?
Well, I think there are various criteria. On the one hand, God is reciprocal. So if you're approaching God from a very sato angle, God will like that, because God is absolutely pure and called the purifier. But then you'll see in many verses of the Gita, God says, with sincerity, if you come to me, whether you're, you know, pure, or even if you are the lowest of the low, but you come to me with sincerity, I'm right there for you. So you have the sort of the lawful God, but who's also very loveful, and who says, you know, all you have to do is be real, be sincere, and I'm right there. And he is. Hmm.
Okay, any last thoughts about chapter 14 before we say goodbye to our viewers?
I think just to spend time with yourself at least once a day, and have a look at your day and see, you know, what was the quality of my action, my feelings, my mentality through the day? Am I living life in a pure way, in a real way, in an authentic way, or am I just, you know, under the influence of my hedonistic tendencies? Do I restrain those, or do I just do whatever I feel?
Mm. Okay, thank you, Sister Denise. That was quite enlightening, wasn't it? So if the three gunas were of interest to you, of interest to you, if chapter 14 is of particular interest to you, I hope this episode and the one preceding this has been of some use to you in terms of understanding yourself, God, and the Bhagavad Gita itself on a much deeper level. I sometimes think that one of the problems in today's world is that we do not live from the depth that we're supposed to, and we tend to live up here, whereas we should be understanding things from much deeper. But Sister Denise has shared her experience and her amazing insight into what is contained in these chapters, specifically chapter 14, and I hope that you are now able to understand this at a level that makes sense to you, and above and beyond that, I hope you are able to apply it. And I really love the note on which Sister Denise ended this talk, today's episode, where she says, wherever you are at in terms of your life, irrespective of your past, irrespective of how good or bad you think you have been. If you go to God at this moment with a sincere heart and say to God, I am before you, He is bound to respond and He will. And that is a beautiful note on which to end today's talk. I thank you for joining us and I do wish you Godspeed. Do take care and I hope to see you again for chapter 15. Goodbye.